What is your nationality?
I'm a drunkard.
And that makes Rick a citizen of the world.
Here we go.
It's the first quarter of the big game. You want to toss up a Hail Mary.
They've done studies, you know. 60% of the time, it works. Every time.
If you're good at something, never do it for free.
I'd like to be pimps from Oakland or cowboys from Arizona, but it's not Halloween.
Look, my friend, this is just where you and I differ.
Grow up, Peter Pan. Count Chocula.
If my answers frighten you, Vincent, then you should cease asking scary questions.
All I do is win, 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 no matter what. Got money on my mind, I can never get enough. And every time I step up in the building, everybody hands go up.
Hello, North Bank Action Jacks. I'm Tom L. Matt Burr on the board. Man, I need a little bit of volume on that, but that's okay. SP Futures down 5, NASDAQ Futures down 20. We had a kind of a wild weather weekend here in Chicago, and I was wondering, oh, by the way, Matt Burns' 25th birthday yesterday. I knew you when you were young.
Yeah, back when I was a kid.
Yeah.
When I started this job, I had a few less gray hairs.
Well, now you're mature, a wife and a family. Well, not quite there yet, eh?
Yeah, getting close every day, whether I like it or not.
Wait a minute, you got somebody special?
No. Yeah, nothing like that.
Are you going to go for, you know, I bet you could, you know, that match thing. You can get all kinds of different. So why don't you go for the farm girl match?
Hey, that's an idea. Was it a Farmers Online, Farmers Only?
No, they get, we had a lady who used to work here. Very attractive, very bright. She and her boyfriend of a while.
Hmm.
I don't know what the deal was there. Never asked. Anyway, they were no longer boyfriend and girlfriend.
Hmm.
So she went on a tall person match, and
yeah.
She met some guy, and they're engaged. The guy's terrific.
It seems to work for her. Yeah, absolutely.
And he got a prize. I'll tell you, he did pretty good. I mean, she's one of the nicest ladies I've ever met. And
that's for sure.
5'10"-ish, maybe 5'11".
Yeah. Oh, I think she's taller than me. Jeez.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And anyway, so you could end up with some girl on some huge farm somewhere.
Honestly, that doesn't sound too bad. Life on the farm, beautiful woman.
You'd be like Eddie Albert in Green Acres, for God's sake.
Yeah, going the other way, though. Yeah.
No, the question is, would you get a Mr. Haney? You ever see that show?
Years ago. Oh, my gosh, years ago.
Yeah, years and years ago. Anyway, we look like we're down a little bit here. The weekend was interesting in Chicago for a lot of reasons. Hey, John, how are you?
Great, Tom.
Thank you for piling in a little bit. I was just saying the weekend was bizarre weather-wise. Mm-hmm. We had the Air and Water Show, and it was 90-degree heat. But it wasn't... This summer, we've had hotter summers. I don't know when I've felt one this humid here for this length of time.
You know, it's been the same thing every day for so long that there's a fatigue factor that I don't recall, you know, in other summers. And we have had hotter summers, for sure. But this was the toughest one for me.
Mm.
I think it's the humidity, when it's humid, it doesn't cool down at night. That's kind of the key. If you were to take the top temperatures, we've had many more than 90-degree days. If you look at the bottom temperatures, I think those are the danger ones. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know. This would be just by the roughest summer I've ever known if you didn't have AC.
Definitely.
I mean, it would just be... but anyway, the Air and Water Show is fortunately got over before any kind of rain. They show all these big storms coming in from the north, and I'm on the Stevenson heading out to Audrey down in Orland, and I could see it coming from the right. And just as I got to LaCrange Road, it starts pouring. Well, when I head south, then I'm ahead of it, right? So I managed to beat it down to Orland. But it wasn't that bad wind-wise or anything, but it poured for like an hour before we went to dinner. And then all of a sudden, there was one later that came south down I-80, and it thundered. I don't know. I don't think I got any sleep. Every time you went to doze off, there was a clap of thunder like right outside your ear, it seemed. All from maybe midnight to 4 a.m. I don't think I've ever seen that. Lightning and thunder. We didn't get anywhere near as much rain as the first time, but just crazy stuff. And, man, the place right by you, the roof got blown off?
Yeah, that was in Mount Prospect. I just saw the photos today, actually. Roof.
You watched the news Saturday night. They were all over the thing. They could have interviewed you.
The roof of this apartment building just flew right off. I mean, you know, you hear about maybe, you know, it just goes to show how strong these winds were. I was sitting on my porch watching as the storm came in. We thought it was going to just be another storm. Our flag on the pole was just going, you know, it was just horizontal, just going straight the other way.
Is this a MAGA flag or is this a...
It's an American flag, yeah.
You know, when I found out for the first time, Jan probably knows this, he can tell me I'm an idiot for not knowing it. The flag that people use, the rebel flag...
Yeah, the old Confederate one, yeah.
That's not the Confederate flag.
Oh, really?
No. John, I suppose you knew that.
Oh, the Stars and Bars or whatever?
That's the battle flag of the Army of Virginia. The Confederate flag looks somewhat similar, but it's not the same.
Yeah, I'm looking up the actual Confederate flag. It's just three bars. Well, that makes more sense.
Yeah, yeah.
And then a ring of stars.
It's not the same thing.
I never knew that. Wow.
That was General Lee's flag for the Army of Virginia. Southerners don't know what their own flag
was. The flagship, you know, unit, too. And I think that's all that's crossed over in history. It's the only thing people have seen in paintings or depictions, and it's at Appomattox because that's where we surrendered that army.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's amazing when all kinds of people can be wrong, isn't it? funny when that happens.
For a century and more.
Yeah. So, of course, I do my usual Stocks and Jacks reporting by hanging around, and so Audrey and I manage, after the pouring rain, we sneak out to dinner, go to some place in Tinley, which we like, and we sit at the bar and usually find somebody there to talk to. Usually somebody you really want to talk to. No, Saturday wasn't maybe the same, except for Audrey. So we're sitting there, a couple guys come in, are sitting next to it, and turns out they maybe knew each other. He's a commercial real estate guy, and Audrey does the other stuff, and so, of course, she says something about, I do a show and manage money. And then the guy starts talking about, well, man, you must be all fired up. I'm sitting there, where is this going, right? You can sort of just tell when people start talking where they come from. I mean, probably one of the worst hangovers from being in an index pit, 350 people, John, is your body read of people is... incredibly good, because you stood next to that many people all those years, and you could tell if somebody was winning or losing. You could smell the difference whether they were winning or losing, and you could just tell by the way they talk, by how interested they. Anyways, this guy starts talking about how he and Audrey, of course, start talking about the economy and politics. I'm going, oh god, and then the guy blurts out with the, as soon as we get this Russian thing over and we can start doing business with them, the economy is going to go to the moon, and everybody will be able to sell stuff to Russia as soon as, you know, Trump makes a deal. Then the next one, I'm in the middle of eating my piece of lasagna, and as soon as he gets rid of that idiot Powell, well, interest rates will go way down, and the economy will be something like you've never seen. At this point now, I'm reaching for the air sickness bag, right? And Audrey goes, well, Tom doesn't believe like any of that stuff, and he goes, well, why? I'm going, I don't want to go there. I just don't want to go there. So I give a little spin about, you know, the tariffs, which nobody seems to think they're paying, are definitely going to raise prices at some level. Nobody knows exactly where, but it's not going to be zero. And oh, by the way, it's the same time when it's about 5 or 6 months since the Fed started pouring money into the system, and so did the rest of the world. And that has about a 6-month lag. I said, I don't think you want to be in the way of this price level come October, September, maybe November. He looks at me like I got 5 heads. What do you mean? Prices are going down. And as soon as the interest rate's down, they're going down. I go, you know, how about if I just finish my dinner, you and Audrey talk? Hey, I'm like, wait, where are we going with this? So then I go to my brother's yesterday, and one of the guys there from softball, really nice guy, and he does remodeling work and, you know, flip houses. And he's just a super dude. Him and his wife are terrific. And, you know, plus he's a pretty good softball player. The guy's got to be 45, and he's all out. If it's sliding, he's sliding, you know, those kind of guys. And I'm going, geez, I stopped sliding when I was 35. But anyway, he says to me, I came over, just want to talk to you about, you know, what's going on. What are you talking about in your show? By the way, how do I get on there? I want to be a listener, you know, blah, blah, blah. All I heard was hear about it. So he starts to ask me, okay, what do you guys are talking about lately? And I said, well, unfortunately, you know, politics is kind of driving the market, and he goes, what do you mean? I said, well, you know, everything that comes out of Washington, there's a market move. And some of the stuff, you know, has to be front run, or if it isn't, I mean, I'm, you know, these tariffs on copper, you start seeing, you know, once in a century move, two and three times, well, it actually happened twice. So you know, these it's really difficult for people to do any kind of normal trading when every minute something will move and you look and see where somebody said something in Washington. And my mind is, no way, one of two things is happening. Either people are so damn stupid they don't realize what they're saying is market moving, which would be a problem, or they're front running it and making more money hand over fist, which is a problem. I said, the guy's name's TC. I said, TC, which is worse? He goes, now there is a question. He goes, I don't want anybody in there who's a crook, but I don't want anybody there that's dead dumb either. I don't know which is worse. I've not been able to figure that one out either. So then he says, what do you think about this inflation stuff? So I launch into my thing. He says, let me ask you and your brother. Both of you answer at the same time. What percentage of the population have any idea what you just said? And I go, probably pretty small. He goes, nobody. He goes, education is such that nobody has any idea what you're talking about. He goes, yeah, it makes perfect sense. Because nobody knows what the money supply is. I mean, he does. I mean, he went to college. Not that, that many means anything. He goes, I understood kind of what you're saying, pretty much. He goes, but if you went through it again, I'd understand it. He goes, I don't think anybody has any idea what you're talking about. I haven't heard it on TV. I haven't heard it anywhere. He goes, what's the problem with that? I go, I don't know. You're the one who asked the question. John, what are we doing here? Are we dumbing down the world? Or what are we? Then I had to listen to watch the Bear games. I had to listen to Kevin Warren go back and forth talking about his stadium that he wants to build. Do you realize they're going to create 56,000 jobs? How would you like to audit that number? Well, 56,000. The parking lot doesn't hold that many people.
That's a lot of beer vendors, Tom.
I'm not talking about. He's talking about workers, not fans. It's going to create 56,000 jobs.
Where have we heard that before?
Yeah, but what are you talking about?
I hear it all the time. Every crazy construction project or sports stadium or whatever is going to fix the job market.
Yeah,
there'll be jobs forever. Be like Happy Dale or something, and I'm still waiting for it to happen, because I've never seen it happen.
I don't know if I ever told you this before, and Matt probably never. I can tell you one construction project that I wasn't there or anything. The Mirage in Vegas just closed, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Well, showing my age, I used to go to Vegas a lot in the 70s, and maybe, I don't when the Mirage opened. Man, why don't you find that out? I'm going to say it opened 81-ish, maybe 79. Anyway, the Mirage was the first place that was built.
89,
wow. It was built as a, what term would you use, Jen? As a complete, it's going to sound stupid, as a complete place on day one. When I say that, you look at the pictures of the original Caesar's Palace, the original Flamingo, and it's small casino and rooms and so forth and a bar and a entertainment venue. And then as they got better and better, they built on. Well, the Mirage was built totally from scratch, and by Steve Wynn. And I used to go when I stayed out there. We would drive through Caesar's parking lot. And there's a road behind Caesar's and all those places. I think it's called Industrial Road. It's the back to all those casinos on the side toward the freeway. Well, there was this huge health club over there, and I was always going to health clubs in the morning. I'd head over there. They had a lot of handball players, so I could always get a game. They had a basketball court. They had more women there. I tell you what, Jan, if we could go back in time, the first place we'd go is there. The scenery was unreal, and because all the showgirls were all working out, and talk about in shape. These girls would buzz the top of the Stairmaster, and then I go up to play one of the handball courts. I hear all this music. Of course, I go and look, and it's these ladies. They had to be 65, 70. They must have been showgirls, some older showgirls, and they got the music going in there. Every one of these ladies could still put their ankle over their head. They were all in spectacular shape. They were like, I'm sitting there going, wow. what? Obviously, those girls had different genes than other people, to be able to do that. But anyway, it started all of a sudden one year. I go up there and they're building this place. And I'm looking at it because the Mirage is right next to Caesars. Well, now Caesars has the big shopping thing. Well, that wasn't there. Anyway, so one was just a little bit down. And the parking lot is loaded with cars. And I'm sitting there going, what in God's name? And guys are working on this thing. They look like ants on an anthill, Jan. And I'm going to say 1,000 guys. Which, when was the last time you saw a construction project like that? It wasn't 56,000, it was 1,000, and you noticed it immediately. So I get back and I call our buddy Dak Doherty, because Dak knows all, he knows the people out there that were the union people and so forth. I said, Dak, what's going on with this Mirage place? He goes, what do you mean? I said, well, there's people working there like there's no tomorrow. He says, well, Steve Wynn doesn't think there is a tomorrow. I said, what are you talking about? He goes, they told him he's going blind, and he wants to see the place complete before he goes blind. He's going, they're pouring a floor a week. He goes, nobody does that, but he's doing it. He had these guys working down like you wouldn't believe. And then we went to, we had a seminar a year later, and when that place opened on day one, this is 89, guess what their nut was per day? Oh, I got on the stomach. So I just got it all.
I could do it.
$1 million. A day. And because they didn't have any, it wasn't like they built a little piece, you know, then made some money, built the other piece, everything paid for. They started out flat out, just day one, come on in. And they went and got Siegfried and Roy. They were at the Lido at the Stardust, like between acts. And then they brought those guys in there as their main thing. They put the huge thing there for the Tigers to live there. So you wouldn't see the Tigers. And the dude made money from day one, and everybody was aghast at how much money he spent on this place, and how much he needed to. They thought for sure he was going to crash and burn. They knew it was a beautiful place, but $1 million a day was just off the top of everybody's head. Now here we got a guy saying he's going to have 56,000 workers, and we're supposed to believe this crap? I'm just saying.
Yeah, well, especially, I mean, just to pick up on the Vegas theme, Tom, I haven't been there. Well, I mean, I've been through it, really. I've never spent time in Las Vegas gambling or anything. But what I hear about it, what I read about it now, is that it's sort of having convulsions. You know, it's losing a lot of its, you know, traffic. One of my nieces has just moved back to McHenry County. I was talking to her over the weekend, and, you know, she said she just can't stand living in Vegas anymore. She's got kids, and she said, I don't want to raise them there, and I really never did, but it's worse than ever. It's just, it's incredibly tacky, and lots of crime, and just grungy, and none of the things I ever heard say about the place, you know, when she first moved out there, is, you know, 20-plus years ago. So I'm not sure if you have any, you know, reports on this, or what's going on.
I have not been there in a while. We started going in the late 70s. When you could go out there and back for like next to nothing. We talk about a different world. Matt Burns, I don't even know what the hell I'm talking about here. Our buddy Dak, not Dr. J, Dak Doherty, called me up one day. Hey, guys, we're going to Vegas this week. I go, we're doing what? We're going to Vegas. I got us two spots. Well, back when for those who don't remember, and Matt doesn't remember, airlines were all totally regulated. So wherever you went anywhere, the price was the same on any airline, and that's why they competed with food. They competed with how good the stewardesses looked. I mean, it was unbelievable. The brand of girls, what they wore, Armani gowns, right, Jan? And, but anyway, that was, the competition was in the service. It had nothing to do with the fare. So they said, okay, we're going to try and deregulate this, but we're not going to do it right away. We're going to allow these, like, charter stuff just to see how it goes. So you could have charter flights that were a lot cheaper, but the issue, but how's this for a rule? If you booked your charter flight and you canceled, you didn't get your money back, because that was a part of the discount. Okay, so, but if you call this number on the north side, 1-800-SODA-POP, they resold the spots in the charter. Somebody else already lost their dough. So you get these guys 2 or 3 days in advance. You'd call up and I'd say, I need two. Say, John, if you and I were going, or if we drag Matt with us, we get three. They'd say, okay, where do you want to stay? And it'd be like $150 maybe for, like, you know, the Westward Ho or some dump. Or then it was like 180 for maybe the Riviera, it was maybe 200 for the Flamingo, 220 for Caesars. So depending on where you wanted to go, you got your price. Well, you show up at the airport, and then we always went on a Thursday to Sunday, but they had Friday to Monday, Sunday to Thursday. But if you catch my drift here, the same plane that would drop the people off on Thursday, and they'd fly out like at a DC-8, or we went to 707 once, wow. Mostly it was a DC-8 that they weren't, you know, wasn't even like in service anymore. So you fly out on Thursday, well, they'd pick up the Sunday to Thursday crew and fly them home. So it was back and forth the same day. And the stewardesses loved it because they got, you know, 7 hours airtime. So the people, the stewardesses were all like the older ones because that was, they were able to pick those routes. Plus, the people going out there, easiest people in the world to deal with, he ended up, it was all free booze on the way out. Some of them even had a bar in the front. So you had some chow, which is always pretty good. Everybody's putting their name on $5 bills and throwing it in the bag, so gambling all the way out. And, you know, it was the happiest group. If I was a stewardess, that's the group I'd want to be with, right? Not the guys, the business guys demanding a cup of coffee in 2 seconds or, you know, call the president of the airline. So you'd fly out. First thing you do is you got to O'Hare, you handed them your bags. That was the last you saw them. There was no security. You walk right through to the bar. And when you went to Vegas, you didn't have to pick them up. They brought them to your room. So, wow. So you go out there, and you go right to the casino, have dinner, come stumbling back to the place at like 1 in the morning, open the door, and there's your suitcase. Can you imagine that today?
God. Wasn't everything comp, too?
If you were playing, yeah, everything was comp. If you were playing, so you sat down, and they had $2 tables back then, but if you were a big shot, you played a $5 table. Now, I don't think you can find a $25 table. But there was a show every night. The shows were $20. There was nobody there that wasn't like a gambler. You didn't have, now it's massive amounts of people on the street just walking up and down because it's the place to be. I'm going to say 10% of the people now are gambling. Those days, every day. But you went to a show every night. You dressed up. The thought of crime, there was no crime. I don't know if the mobs, you never had a problem walking to your car. You might bump into a hooker. But sometimes you did, and sometimes you didn't. I don't know how that all worked. Sometimes they were all over the place. Sometimes you couldn't. You never saw one. But the I got solicited jogging at 7 o'clock on a Sunday morning. You know, back when I looked better, I'm running along. A lady goes, "Hey, you want a party?" And I go, "I'm out running. I don't even have my wallet." "You look pretty honest. You're good for it. You'll come back and pay me." I'm just jogging. Leave me alone. Off I went. But anyway, there was none of that, John. And it was all down on the strip or downtown. And you went into some of the neighborhoods, they had the best school systems, great athletes. It wasn't Greg Maddux was from Vegas, right?
Yeah.
I mean, now it's this massive thing where the first thing you do when you go out there, one of my buddies, the first thing you do is you go to the Walgreens and you buy a six-pack of water because they want like $4 of water in the hotel. I mean, now everything costs an arm and a leg. And we saw Rodney Dangerfield for $12.
Wow, that's awesome.
That included 4 beers.
Oh. Even better, yeah.
Yeah, the highest price one I ever went to was Johnny Carson, and he was $25, and he was 3 drinks or 4 beers. You know, they weren't series drinks, but they were drinks.
Mm.
And we saw every. We went to a concert. We went to a show every night. We went to two one night. We went to see Red Fox 2:30 in the morning, triple X rated show.
Oh, awesome.
Down at the Hacienda.
And lived to tell about it.
But, and then the funniest part, we walk out and there's these three ladies who were probably in there. Late 30s at the time when I was a lot younger, and all they do were complaining about how dirty it was. And so she says to me, "What do you think?" I said, "Well, I think it was a triple X rated 2:30 in the morning show." I don't know what you expect. His buddy Slappy White was the lead in. We saw everybody. I saw Don Bob Newhart. We saw Rodney Dangerfield. We saw Johnny Carson. So who was the guy, the big band leader? He was there forever. He's still alive.
Herb Alpert.
No, I didn't see him. We're supposed to see Frank Sinatra, but then the night his mother got killed in a plane crash. So
oh,
he didn't,
yeah.
You know what I'm talking about. He was Mr. Vegas, John. I'll think of the name. But he had the orchestra, and you ended up seeing everybody. I never saw Paul Anka. He was never there when we were there, and I never saw Elvis. But anyway, it was a place where everybody came out there to have a good time. The prices were cheap, and I mean, you know, the buffets are $8, and that was a good one. And if you really want to go over the top, you went to the Sands for $20 on Sunday, where they had every kind of smoked fish in the world. The brunch, it was absolutely delicious.
Oh yeah.
But like I said, it was really something. We saw Johnny Carson in the same place that the Rat Pack was. They did a movie,
Ocean's 11. Yeah.
Yeah, and the little room in the Sands.
What happened, Tom? I mean, is there competition? Are those crowds going elsewhere to do that anymore? I don't think so.
What happened, I think, John, is the places became islands to themselves. I mean, if you go to one of the newer places, you don't leave. I mean, there's the people wandering around the street are a totally different set of people that are actually. If you go to Caesars now, you stay in Caesars. It's a big convention crowd. It's a lot different. I mean, I don't know when the progression started. We used to go to money shows out there. And they were usually at like the middle tier places, like the Bally's or out of Paris or someplace like that. They all ended up having convention centers. And originally, the convention center was the Vegas Convention Center. I don't think I've ever been to one there. All these other places built like competitive stuff. It's a different type of thing. And the people wandering around the streets, the place that started that was the Rio. They started getting the club crowd from L.A., where people would drive in for the big club stuff, and, you know, and party with the naked pools and all that stuff. None of those people, I won't say none, they didn't come there for the gambling. They came there for the big party atmosphere. That was totally secondary when we first started going there. I mean, you wouldn't recognize the place. I have some pictures here in the office. My brother and I out there where people took pictures. All the places behind us are all down. I mean, there's only... So what's there from when I started? Caesar's still there. Flamingo's still there.
Was Treasure Island there when you were there?
Oh, God. Well, I mean, not when I first went, no.
Oh, okay.
Because the Treasure Island was a... an add-on place because they couldn't have enough rooms in the
Mirage,
right? Mirage, yeah. And Circus, I think, is still there somehow. The Sahara has been all remodeled. That's still there. But the Riviera is down. The Landmark's down. Castaways, all the dunes is down. Desert Inn's down.
Sands,
yeah.
No longer.
The Sands Convention Hall is still there, right?
Yeah, it is.
So, yeah, man, as for somebody going out there and wandering around and having a good time, you know, I don't know, John. I mean, it's... If the casinos, all they have these things on the street. You can't walk down the street. This is 5 years ago, so I don't know what it's like now on the weekends or whatever. But I did talk about something weird. We did some seminars there, and I had to do some stuff for the CBOE in LA, right? So I actually made the drive Sunday morning from Vegas to LA. If ever you want to see something bizarre, so you know, of course I leave early. Get up, I'm an early guy. I even was then. So I got up to crack of dawn, and I got this car, and of course I negotiated a deal where I could turn it in out in L.A. and at the airport and didn't have to drive back. So a one-way trip. I didn't negotiate a big deal, but everybody does that. So I start out, and of course I didn't have enough gas, so I pull in the gas station, and everybody was wandering around. None of them even been asleep yet, like except me. They're wandering around the gas station, Janet and Matt. Everybody's picking up, like, Doritos, Ho-Hos, that kind of stuff. And you hop in the car, and off you go. Well, it's a two-lane highway. You know, I mean, it's four-lane, but it's two-lane going your way. It's jammed. Mm. I mean, there's no way you can see the scenery. I mean, it'd be great to be a passenger. But it's like driving the Ryan, you know, on a Friday night. I mean, you're moving fast, but everybody's going fast, and you're five car lengths apart. It looks like you're driving in Indianapolis, for God's sake. So you go out about 100 miles, and you pull in for a coffee. Now all of a sudden, everybody's, like, really hungry. And you pull into this place, and there's a Burger King, there's a McDonald's, there's, like, all the different fast foods. Every one of them is packed, because now people really got the munchies and the hoes didn't cover it anymore. I'm watching this show. Plus, nobody looked like they had a shower. And this must go on every Sunday. And the same radio station keep going over these little mountain areas, and these little stations keep falling off. All you have to do is hit search, and you pop back onto the same station in the next valley. Mm. And people do this like let's do this every weekend. I mean, it's not a short ride. I mean, it's a solid 6 hours at 75 miles an hour. I mean, it's a ways.
That's right.
I mean, I almost want to go back one of these days, John, to see how much it's changed. I bet I wouldn't recognize the place. To answer your question with about 1,000 words or less.
Well, can you think of any substitutes or replacements for that crowd where they would go in lieu of that now? What's got that kind of draw?
I don't know where. I have no idea where a guy like you or me could go for $150 round trip, go to shows every night for $20. I mean, when I started trading on the trading floor, I mean, I had more money than most. I'd bring a grand cash with me in 1981. And I would put $200 down a blackjack table, and I'd play two hands. I was kind of a half-assed counter. I wasn't really great at it, just enough to defend myself. If I lost a couple times, I kind of got tired. I'd play little craps, and we'd go, we'd watch a football game, and I'd put a little bet down again. I was never a, I like blackjack a lot. So I played that, but you learn to talk to people at the table. It was very enjoyable. I mean, it was a people show. The dealers were fun to talk to. I really enjoyed it. It was a great. Then you go work out during the day, you hang around at the pool, and for 4 days, for me it didn't get much better. But now I don't know if it's anything like that. I mean, I don't know if people do that. It's harder and harder to go from place to place. I can't imagine. We always run in a car. You pull out of one place, pull the next place parking lot. I can't imagine doing that now at these big, huge places. Matter of fact, the Golden Steer out there, the steak place, they sponsored the show for a while. Mm. Dr. J and I run a score. They gave us $20 gift certificates. And we used to give maybe more than that. It was like 50. We give it to anybody who called in.
Well, Reno hasn't picked up the slack, has
it? No, no.
That isn't any bigger than it
was. And Atlantic City's as much as useless.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people around here, at least, this is just my hypothesis, go to Rosemont. It's easy, it's quick drive. You go to the casino there. What is it, Four Winds?
Yeah.
And it might scratch that itch. You don't have to go to Vegas.
Well, I mean, it's really, I think it's sort of scary. How can I put this? The nice thing about Vegas back in those days, if there is such a nice thing, is most of the people were like, my parents used to go 3-4 times a year. They'd bring out the amount of money they were going to spend. My mom played poker. My mom was a great poker player. She played poker. Once in a while, she'd play some blackjack. And my stepfather played blackjack. But my mom rarely lost. I mean, she'd play with the shills in the morning. But you went there. You had your return trip paid for. You had your hotel paid for. You brought cash. There were no, well, near the end, there were cash machines. So one of the guys, JD, used to come with. He wouldn't bring any money. But his cash machine limit was $200 a day, so he knew that's how much he could spend. So that was his budget, what he could get out of his cash machine. And, when you think about it, John, it's a way to budget yourself.
Well, yeah.
So, but you'd do your stuff, you'd hang at the pool, and the crowd left. If you went to a gas station, you'd see local people playing the nickel slots or something. But they're really, I'm going to say 90% of the money that poured into the machines. The whole state of Nevada didn't have a million people back then. All the money was people who basically had prepaid their way out of there, except for the people who drove in from Vegas or L.A. So it was if ever there was a gambling mecca that was sort of perfect in terms of any of the problems you had with gambling, it was a spot because all the people who gambled left. Where you don't have people like going into the couple places on the south side where Audrey and I go. Where you'll see the waitresses, blow half their day's tips on the machines on the way out the door. I'm sure there was a backdrop of that in some of the local bars and so forth, but you really didn't see any of that with people that came from Chicago. They had a budget. If you lost, it wasn't great. Lost it all, or if you lost half, or whatever, you had a good time. I mean, if I'd have lost 500 of my 1,000, it wouldn't have been a successful trip. But what? I had a good time. It was okay. It wasn't like I brought 1,000 and ran up the checks and blew through 20 when I was out there or something. And most people had that attitude. It was the world's greatest place because everybody had to have a way to get there and a way to get home. Mm. Now the town's got to be a million people. Is what's Vegas? Has it reached a million yet, Matt? I want to look that up. So, John, in Atlantic City, that was totally different. That was all buses. Went to Atlantic City a couple times. And when you drove in, you saw buses as far as the eye can see. Every little town in Pennsylvania and places, sort of like they used to do on the south side, you go to Hammond. And I don't know what they're doing, but now it has to have taken a huge hit from the casinos, Matt, and being able to do it in every bar. I mean, if you're just going to play a slot machine, why the hell do you have to go to the casino?
Well, I think that's probably more than anything else that's contributed to the, the bloom being off of Vegas. Because why... If your goal is to gamble, I mean, there might be other reasons to go there. But if you're a gambler, why would you, spend the money to go there where stuff isn't cheap anymore? Mm-hmm. And
$300 a night for a room and airfare to go and gamble when you can gamble right here.
I mean, it's a sign of the times. I think that people are going to go to, Joliet or someplace else instead.
Well, so. You wonder though, Jamie. We've talked about it, on the show, just because it's an economic sort of thing. Whenever you try and do something extra, you look at how much money people actually have and how much they can contribute to it. I mean, in when I was young, my parents would go to the track. My aunt and uncle damn near lived there. That's where you went and gambled. Or you played poker at home, your neighbors or whatever. That was your gambling, right? My mom played a little bridge for money, but not heavy. She was a good bridge player. But that's what you did. And all of a sudden, okay, there's a little off-track betting. Okay, we did some off-track betting. Well, then we got the lottery. Now, that sucked up a lot of people who don't know the odds. If you walk into a gas station, you see all kinds of people who don't seem to know the odds buying $35 tickets, which is pretty scary. Then you had off-track betting. And okay, well, then you got a casino. But you didn't include the racetracks in any of the casinos. All right, so they got a few casinos. Well, then you decide we're going to screw the casinos and we're going to have gambling in every restaurant and bar, except for in the city. Well, the casinos didn't get that money. The state is actually the casino for the bars and restaurants, right? They're the ones right. Who pay. If you win $1,000, you don't win it from the restaurant, you win it from the state, right?
Yeah.
So now all of a sudden, but you're right back probably to the same amount of gambling money that you're going to get. And now, by the way, you've added this another huge layer of sports gambling. So somebody Matt Weber's age, who thinks he knows everything about football, and starts betting every week on football, I doubt very seriously if he's going to the casino. I doubt very seriously if he's playing anything in the bar. Now, you've just got another place. You sure as hell not going to the horse races, because there aren't any horse races anymore, except well, they still have some at Hawthorne, I think they do, but about, what, five out of five tracks, four are closed?
Yeah.
So what have you done? I mean, you're just passing the gambling money around in terms of convenience, you know, and now why would a sports gambler ever go to the casino? Now you got this new rule that Trump guys put in, and this now you can only take off 90% of your losses against your winnings. Well, if you're a big time gambler, I could probably tell you a couple of guys. One I know for sure. I'm going to say, John, at the end of the year, the dude has wagered. I'll be nice and say $250,000. I think I'm really light, really light. I say wagered. So if he breaks even, he probably won, what, $250 and lost $250. Now he's got to pay taxes on what? He can only deduct $225. He's got to pay taxes on $25. Why? I mean, what is that going to do for, you know, you've decided that you need gambling to solve all your problems. Now you put a tax on it. I mean, what are we doing here?
Plus, what is the pleasure of going into a mini mart and blowing money on the lotto? I mean, at least if you went to Vegas, you had stories to tell.
Yeah.
And, you know, entertainment and, you know, friends you could be with. To me, I mean, this is just, it turns into this kind of dreary, sordid, you know, extortion scheme with none of the.
We never did have a good time. Never did have a good time. We always saw three shows or something, somebody good. Wayne Newton's the guy I was thinking about.
Ah, yeah, Mr. Vegas.
Yeah, Mr. Vegas. You know what? I would never buy a Wayne Newton album, but he was terrific. The show was terrific. Those guys, there was never anybody that wasn't good out there.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, those guys all knew how to work the room, but, yeah, you wonder what are you doing? We're trying to grab this extra tax money. We're doing the same thing with tariffs, but isn't that really what we're doing? We're trying to, I mean, the average person who like, you know, I tell a story once in a while. You talk about marginal tax rates. I lived at 70 West Huron. Every Saturday morning, I'd go downstairs at 7:30, grab my coffee, head south, take my mother to breakfast. And I'd run into the same African-American guy every Saturday morning who would work the streets in those days. And nice guy. I mean, we wouldn't let you drugged out or anything like some of the, a lot of dudes are now. Sit there and talk to him. And he'd say, yeah, I made $20 last night. I see him with a big bottle of Coke, two bags of Doritos, and 16 lottery tickets.
Living the life.
And I'm going, should I launch into a thing about the odds of the lottery, or should I just let them have a nice time? You know, I mean, what was the guy's marginal tax rate? 16 out of 20. 80%? Jesus.
And he got nothing to show for it.
Nothing to show for it. I mean, maybe once in a while he won. I don't know. But it just... What's the return on a lottery? Well, the return on regular lotto is what? 45% or something? 42? Something along those lines? I mean, the track
yeah,
used the track 40 used to
something, yeah.
The track used to pay 85. I don't know if you knew that or not, man. But the track paid 85 on a bet. 85% back.
And a lot more fun.
It was a lot more fun. And the other 15 was, it was split between the state and the place, right?
Yeah.
For those, you know anything about pari-mutuel betting, Matt?
No, I don't think so.
Well, say 500 of us go to the track, and there's all these different pools, but just figure there's one pool. In the wind pool, we all bet. And if you bet on $100 on horse number one, the odds are not made by the people in the morning, they're made by the people that bet. So every time somebody bets, it changes the odds for whatever horse you're on, because the payout is 85% of the wind pool.
Ah.
So depending on how many tickets are on that particular horse, that's how they figure out who gets paid what.
Huh.
So the morning line could be 6-1, the horse could go off 1-1 or 5-4. And once the betting thing, so the really sharp bettors are always wide. In the middle of the track were all these boards. They'd have the wind pool board, and you'd start out the next race, and all of a sudden, if you were one of the guys that scurried up to the thing, and you put $10 down on the four horse, all of a sudden on the board in the middle of the track, there'd be $10 in the four slot. That'd be your bet.
Huh.
And then everybody'd start betting, and all of a sudden, I mean, generally, if a horse was supposed to go off at 2-1. As time went on, more and more people bet on him than on the 10-1 guy. I mean, usually, it never really matched the morning line, John, but at least they normally went that way, right?
I mean, yeah.
So, you know, instead of paying 2-1, it would pay 2.2-1 or 1.9-1 or something like that. But actually, they would divide the amount of tickets. Well, first of all, they'd take 15% off the top, half of which went to the track, half went to the state. And the other 85% was divided up by the people with the winning tickets. So the lotto pays, what, 40-some percent, John? So way less. God knows what do you suppose the machines in the restaurants pay back?
Oh, God, 10, 15?
I don't know. They do better than that. In Vegas, they used to have, you see these big signs, 99% return or 95% return on the carousel slots. There's this big thing in the middle, these big carousels. Well, the slot next to it down the aisle, that didn't pay 95%. How many people were so dumb that they thought that if you just went, that meant every slot paid? No, that's not what they said. They said the carousel slots, right, John? paid 95%. So these people are playing a carousel. And you'd see people winning on slots out there. I mean, I don't think if you say they're a month, you would, but guys won. I mean, some of the places paid pretty well. And that was why people would go to places like the Palace Station or something where all the locals went, because they paid way higher than the stuff at, like, Caesars.
Yeah, locals know.
Yeah. Matter of fact, the Palace Station, every week, if you brought them your paycheck, they'd give you a swing at the big wheel. And if you won, they would double your paycheck.
Hmm.
And if you went there every week, the odds were probably 50-1. Oh, no, 25-1. So guys would tell you, yeah, I come in here every Friday night, I cash my paycheck here, which means you buy something, right? Right? I mean, see, you young guys don't get any of this. But the guy said, my paycheck gets doubled about twice a year, right about the odds. And I said, okay. It's just like when we were real young, John, people would cash their paycheck at the local bar, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Our buddy Dr. Blade worked at a place in New York where they made radiators, man. And a Friday night, two Brinks trucks would show up, because like 1,000 or 1,500 guys would go to this bar, cash their paycheck, and grab a beer.
That's the way to do it.
And most in those days, the women had no idea how much the guy made. Seriously, the guy would give the wife the allowance, right?
Yeah.
Right, Jan? She had no idea how much he made. It was an absolute crazy world. We're well over break, so let's just keep talking. SP Futures down 8, and NASDAQ Futures down 46. John, what do you make of this big meeting today? I'm not at all. I don't know if you want to be sneaky about it. I don't know that you can reward somebody for an invasion. You know, this idea of just make a deal. I keep thinking back to what if somebody would have said that to Churchill? Hey, you got no cards, buddy. Well, you better just fold up. I don't know that you can believe Putin anymore. You could believe Hitler. How can you make a deal with somebody you can't believe, John? I mean, whether or not there is one to be made or not, I don't know how you reward somebody who thinks you can. What's going to stop him from doing the same thing 2 years from now?
I suspect there's a strategy here where, you know, there was no face-to-face with Putin and Zelensky. There are lots of reasons for that. But I think that, you know, the key in any of this now, nobody really comes out and says it too strongly, but Zelensky's got to go.
And so does Putin.
Well, but Zelensky's, you know, he's the one who doesn't have elections. You know, you can't say that about Putin.
Those are elections. Anybody he runs against, his plane blows up.
Mm. Well, Putin's got, you know, maybe better control of the process, but the appearance and, you know, all that.
Forget the person. As of now, Putin wants.
But you know, the thing is, Zelensky's, you know, adamant that there isn't going to be any cessation of territory, and he's just blowing smoke. I mean, there is going to be a readjustment here. It's going to have to be.
Well, Putin wants whatever, territory isn't even conquered yet. As of now,
whatever assurances they're going to give the Russians, whether it's, you know, not NATO per se, but it'll be NATO nations because they're accompanying Zelensky here, makes it seem that there's, you know, they're going to throw some sop to Europe about, you know, where they've got some assurances that this isn't going to, you know, spill over into the Baltic states or, you know, wherever else, and that there'll be some kind of adjustment of, you know, where are we in terms of territory, and how is this going to be, you know, laid down so that we create another kind of border from the one that we started out with, and it can't just go back to square one. I don't see any way either side is going to go.
Well, so, I guess my concern here is that people don't necessarily change. If I think you're going to end up with something like the Crimea and those kinds of places, I don't see how that doesn't end up. But the idea that he wants more property than he's even conquered, I don't see how that. It seems a lot to me of, you know, Chamberlain and Hitler at this point. And I don't. I mean, what assurances? If I'm Europe, I mean, the lady was on from who's ever the lead negotiator. She goes, our policy is you don't get to take people's land by conquest. I mean, that's the policy. And now that doesn't mean that if some of those people really are Russian speaking or whatever that means, if they actually would vote to be in Russia, if ever could be a clean election. I mean, I don't really know the whole nuts and bolts of it over there. But the idea that you could somehow get assurances out of Putin he'll never do it again. I mean, hell, it's like listen to Hitler, for God's sake. Why would you ever believe the guy, John?
You know, I hark back to what Lou said a bunch of times on the show, that, you know, the Russian mindset in this is they have never at all thought of themselves as somehow separate or, you know, out of the loop when it comes to Ukraine. It's a feudal state for them. I don't, no matter how long such a war as we've got now drags out, I don't think that's sufficient to change that mindset. Who was it the other day showed up, you know, Putin was in Alaska, the Russian guy with his T-shirt on with the Soviet Union logo on it. Well, that's a clear sign Ukraine's right back where it started in our eyes.
So why do you believe him?
Well, I'm just saying that the war has not changed that mindset. There's no way it ever would. That it's always going to be considered, you know, if not, you know, a political extension of Russia, it's certainly a cultural extension, and they're not going to just walk away and let it become a plaything for NATO.
A plaything for NATO.
Everybody knew that from the get-go, Tom, except Victoria Nuland.
Yeah, you keep bringing up this NATO stuff, but I will say this: the people in Ukraine felt they were independent. They have feelings too.
That didn't change anybody's.
Well, I mean, what I think as an attorney, you could make an absolute.
And people in the State Department here, Tom, and intelligence have known this all along. I'm not telling anybody.
But I know, but I don't really. To put a blunt on, I don't really give a shit what the Russians think. I care about what the Ukrainians think. It's their place.
We better give a shit, Tom.
Okay, but I'm saying why we can. This is a really tough situation. I get that, but
we made it tough. Tom.
Well,
we made it.
All right, John, you're a very good attorney. You could make a case tomorrow that we have to give France back the Louisiana Purchase.
I'm not talking going back 100 years.
Okay, well, how far back?
I'm talking about what we knew from the get-go.
We're talking. You're talking 25 years.
Talking to 10 years.
Okay, what's the limit?
Well, we started making big mistakes 10 years at least, you know, by going in and stirring up, you know, the change of government in Ukraine to one that was hell-bent on, you know, becoming a part of NATO. That's what we wanted, and we fomented it. We had John McCain over there making all these crazy speeches. What did we think was going to happen?
Every war, when it starts, is both sides think they have something righteous. As adults, or we think we're adults, as the European lady said yesterday, we have, as a world, have decided you don't solve the argument by running to somebody's country and killing people. And we thought, I think we were there, even though the Russians have never been there. They did that with Czechoslovakia. They did it.
They wanted a war.
What?
The people behind this wanted a war, and they fully expected us to go in and spend our ways to oblivion to put Russia back in its place. I blame us entirely for
that. I know you do, and it's a total disagreement. But I will say this. We didn't blow up Angelica's grammar school and her
we gave them a reason to do
it, but John. It's not the same as doing it, John.
It's the proximate cause for all this mess, then.
It's
our meddling, it's our bluster, it's our back in the wrong.
Okay, but it does not justify, and I'll use the example of the
we can't fix what Russia does, Tom. We sure could fix what we did wrong here, but we're not taking any accounting of it. Those people are still calling the shots in this, and we've got Russia.
Well,
and,
when the place
Western Europe now,
okay, but
crazy alignment because of our nutty people.
When the Soviet Union fell apart of their own weight, and maybe not so much their own weight because Reagan kind of spent them into destruction, which is pretty clever on his part, by the way. Kind of spent them into destruction, and they gave up all these territories. Would you have been okay with, we're giving them up for now, but when we get strong again, you'll see our tank in front of your house. Would you have been okay with that?
Well, I would have said from the get-go, if you start telling Russia that we're going to have a NATO nation on your border here, it would have been the same result. We reaped exactly what
Poland. Poland is NATO. Latvia is NATO. Estonia is NATO.
We're talking, you know, Poland was, you know, it's a different situation from Ukraine, I would say.
Well, I mean, isn't Hungary NATO? They're a border state.
That doesn't have any of the cultural history or anything that Ukraine does. So you can't say, oh, it's the same thing.
My point I'm trying to make, Jan, is that whatever...
Hungary was never, you know, a Soviet state.
Well, we got to go to a break, but I don't think any of us would have been comfortable with the idea... Okay, Ukraine can be their independent place, like for a while, until we decide we're going to get them back. I mean, that's not in any sort of anyway. S&P futures down 7, Nasdaq futures down 35. Don't have any huge numbers this week, although there's always numbers. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Now's my shit together, is my shit together.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom. I'm at Byrne on the board. That's the new 25-year-old Matt Byrne on the board. The new mature Matt Byrne on the board.
25 and still alive.
Yeah, hey, I got a quick story for you. S&P futures down 9, NASDAQ futures down 48. I was mentioning not much going on this week. Here I am reading the market calendar. Monday, we have the Home Builder Confidence Index, whatever the hell that is. Tomorrow, we've got housing starts and building permits. Housing starts, they do a little something. We got the minutes of the Federal Reserve meeting on Wednesday, and we have something on Thursday. Initial jobless claims, Philly Fed, S&P Flash U.S. Services PMI, and Flash Manufacturing PMI. So there you go. Next week we have more stuff. But, Janet, some kind of, it's sort of weird stuff. People are asking me about, and I have on the show a lot, about the market, and I don't want, one thing I've learned is you don't try and time the market any kind of given day, but I look at some of the things I've traditionally looked at, and one of them is, we'll have Audrey on in a bit, but the housing prices. And Audrey and I have known each other a long time. We had this discussion in 2007 when I said, it looks to me like, I didn't write this article and I can't find it, I wish I could, the median house could not be afforded by 85% of the population. And I'm going to say that, I could go through the numbers, but I've done that 100 times on the show. All the numbers from 2007. Now, we don't have the pylons of the mortgage-based, all the stuff going on with the companies, buying the mortgage portfolios. Don't have any of that stuff that I know of now, maybe a little bit. But so none of that kind of, that sort of a trigger is on top of the mortgage market. But if you look at the actual numbers, and just, without any sort of opinion whatsoever, they are probably 25 to 40% worse than they were in 2007. When you look at the median house price is like 416, and if you look at the new mortgage rate and the increase in taxes, the increase in mortgage rates, I'm going to say that 85% number not only can't afford it, they're not even close, and probably it's more like 90. So those numbers in my mind are way worse in terms of affordability, in terms of health of the citizen and the economy. That doesn't mean you don't want to go buy a house today. It doesn't mean you want to start shorting houses if you could. It doesn't mean any of that stuff. It's just a number. Also, you look at the market. I was here in 2000. And he had to give lectures to people after the market crashed, talking about repair strategies and option strategies to maybe get them back in the game, those kinds of things. And I looked at some of these stocks, the Cisco's, the Royal Oracle, which is now goes up every day, that was one of them. They were trading, they lost 80% of their value on average. They had gotten to the point where they were 11, 12 times revenue, not earnings, revenue. And now I see companies way bigger than them, 11, 12, 15 times revenue. I'm not going to start naming them because people might try and sell them. Some of them are 50 times revenue, which I can't even understand. Now, that doesn't mean the market's going down this week or tomorrow or ever. And we have the government pouring money in this system trying to make this all go away. I look at those three things, Jan, and I'm very, very concerned. Not for today, because the Biden-Dippers are going to buy everything on the way down. So if we do go down 40%, a lot of people are going to lose 100% of their money because they're going to buy all the way down. That's just the mentality. I saw it in 2000. We had clients like that. Unreal. Matter of fact, we had a... How's this for a wacky story? We had a husband and wife team that had a whole bunch of this dot bomb company. So they get divorced. The wife gets half the stock. She listens. My brother was talked to her on a weekly basis. We'd met him at a seminar. She protected herself with some puts, sold a few calls. When the stock went literally to zero, she probably lost, it's so long ago, 10-15%. Got married to another dude, and she sold that stock, and they went off, and God knows, hopefully they're still doing well. But a guy, on the other hand, when the stock started to go down, he wouldn't protect it. He started selling more puts because he wanted to buy more. At one point, I think the guy had a seven-figure account here. And when he left, we sent him a check for like $75. Because he, on the way down, all he did was buy more. And there was nothing we could do to talk him out of it. And he was a believer, and the company never made a dime. It just was gone. And just crazy stuff. I wonder, John, one thing I will tell investors, don't listen to me. Look at your stuff and say, if somebody handed me the 800 grand or a million or 50 grand, whatever you got in your account, if you had nothing, if you take the money and put exactly what you have back in there, more power to you. But if you say, I'd never buy it at this price, well, then be careful. I'm not telling you that. You're telling yourself that. Does that make sense, John?
Yeah.
What do you make of the numbers being the way they are, and yet everybody's preached that as long as people keep doing stuff, everything's fine. Can we grow into this, or can't we?
Well, I don't know how long the market's going to keep going in the direction it's been going in. If real estate goes in the direction it's going in, I don't know how long that kind of prosperity, if you can call it that, is likely to continue. I'm thinking, Tom, all this push about interest rates, mortgage rates, you got to get them down, you got to stimulate people's appetite for buying a house. We can't compare this time to the time before when rates got pounded down to zero. And it was a very different world then. You didn't have the kind of costs associated with home ownership that you have now. You didn't have the kind of skewed inventory that you have now, where there's lots of houses that can't get on the market or on the sales block because there's nobody around who can afford even zero interest rates if they also have to completely rehab the house and update it and put a new roof and everything on it and pay the insurance.
Trust me, and buy a car,
and everything else. So we don't have that kind of climate where there's a healthy direction for real estate, no matter what the rates came down to. And I mean that maybe implies there's going to have to be a price crash at some point, but it's not just going to have to be a sales price crash. It's going to have to be a crash in lots of other stuff too, to make it affordable again. And I don't think those kinds of concussions are the kind of things you want to have coming at you all over the place. And of course, the stock market will fall victim to that too eventually. It has to. But I don't see any big improvement in people's ability to buy a house without there being a crash.
Johnny, it's funny, you and I joust about certain topics, and we'll continue because there's a couple of disagreements there. But in pretty much general, I think one of the things you and I agree with, and I'll even include Kevin with this, is once things get out of equilibrium, when I say equilibrium, normal pricing, common sense pricing, there's a problem on each side. I mean, we bought a place when people say, well, God, how could you buy a house when rates were 12%? That's easy. The price of the house was down. Duh. And if you could pull it off, that's exactly what we wanted to do, because as the rates came down, the price of the house went up, and you refinanced. you were the cat's ass, right? Now, everybody says, I can't wait to buy a house when I get a 3% mortgage. Knowing full well, I think everybody who did that, John, and some people refinanced down, right, and they kind of lucked out, but if you didn't, if you bought the house at a price and say, I can afford this house at this rate, knowing the rate is, I'll use the term unusual, and probably not sustainable, how many people, if you and I would have gone to the closing, back when people actually went to their closings, if we would have said, what does this do to you for the next 20 years? they'd look at you and say, what are you talking about? I'm getting a great deal. No, it's trapping you. How many people, how many attorneys there, how many real estate agents, how many people thought for a second that the flip side of that, flip side of that pat on the back was a kick in the ass. You're now trapped in this house. You better not get divorced. You better not have more than two kids, or you're going to be eight people in the same bathroom or whatever it is. You'll never leave.
Nobody wanted to hear that, Tom. No.
Yet, I think you and I knew that right out of the gate. When I go back to six, you can't move. Right?
Yeah. And for not just the foreseeable future, for the rest of your life.
For the rest of your life, yeah. I mean, you made out like a bandit for a while, you know. I know one of the guys who did the show, he did the unthinkable. He's probably been in his place 20 years, Jen. And he got an adjustable back when everybody said, boy, that's really a dumb idea. His rate went down like every year, every half year for 10 years until finally he could pay it off. Timing is everything, but whenever you just have to think, okay, mortgage rates are, pick a number, John, better than me, six and a half?
Yeah.
And if they're three, there's a plus and minus to it. And if they're 10, there's a plus and minus to it, right?
Yep.
Because they're not, people, you know, things kind of come back to the, but how do we have all this education going around and yet nobody seems to. That's when you're supposed to have an uncle or a dad or a mom or somebody say, hey, do you know what you're doing? I mean, years ago, our buddy Doc did a lot of real estate, not Dr. J, did real estate closings. He had daughters and a lot of their friends, they get married. He goes, every time I do a closing, every nickel is in the place. I got to take him to dinner afterward. They don't have money for dinner afterward. Because yeah. they have no idea. I think back in the day when your parents bought their first house, I know my stepfather and my, I don't know what the deal was, my mother and father bought a place, but I think people saved up some money, they put it down, they had a job, and the job covered the mortgage fairly easily, I think. I mean, when my parents first got married, they lived with my aunt at the family house. The parents were dead. And my mom and dad moved out. We moved to 56th and Bishop and bought this two flat. And I remember the mortgage. My aunt used to walk us around the corner. You know, we had the mortgage with was Cahill. Remember the place?
Yeah,
it was the old man Cahill. I remember to this day, the guy drove a 51 Plymouth. He saw my nice car. If it ever dies, I'm just gonna pull it over. I grab the license plates and I'm gone. I'll go get a new one. The guy had more money than God, didn't he? But he, you know what a mortgage was?
$80 a month?
$12.
$12.
Or was it $20? Something like that. That was a mortgage. My mom put that much down. And, knows that mom. What do you think the place cost? $5,000? $6,000? I don't know. Something like that.
That's a two-unit building.
Yeah, what was it? You know, it was a walk-up. No central heating. I mean, both places had a stove. You ever live in a place with a stove?
Oh, God, yeah. I saw when I was looking for two flats, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
I was getting pretty depressed.
Well, the place I live, you can still see the round thing and the masonry.
Fireplace, yeah.
Yeah, you still see the round thing where the stove used to go into. Man, used to actually have a kerosene burner like in the living room. That was your stove.
Oh yeah, yeah. And they even had thermostats. Remember?
Yeah.
Pilot lights and stuff there.
I mean, oh yeah, they were high end stoves.
They were really other. You were cooking with gas.
Yeah, literally. Or kerosene or something.
Tom, I'm trying to make sense lately, say in the last 5-10 years, with the population numbers, which, three hundred thirty million people, which is, a big jump from, within our lifetimes compared to what the population was when we were born. But, I try to think what that must mean in terms of replacing housing stock and, changing it morphs, stuff gets demolished, stuff gets upgraded, stuff gets remodeled, deconverted from two units to one unit. All this stuff is always happening if you got a healthy market. There's people looking for different stuff. But I just, housing construction costs now and the market for new construction it's always been traditionally, steered towards people who were at the lower end of their earning curve to make it affordable so they could get in to the market somehow. You might not have the grandest house, and it might not be the top flight construction you always dreamed about, but it would be a starter home. And there were, you know, they could mass produce them pretty much in good times, and, you know, build hundreds of them in a season, and, you know, turn them over right away, and money was, you know, available. And that's how people got into the market. They gradually traded up. Nowadays, I just don't see housing construction as an entry point for anybody. And at the same time, it really isn't. There's no, you know, entry points for people for, you know, older housing that has been neglected or, you know, is old-fashioned now and needs severe upgrading. So what do people do? I mean, we're going to be dealing with a population that has nowhere to live.
Why, thing, the weird part, John, is what you're talking about. By the way, I'm not supposed to do this, especially with you. I agree with you. With the one of the main reason why I live in the place that I do, and I manage the building, and we're always doing some construction because it's an old building, and I have, you know, people that I like that do it, so, you know, we help them out, or I help them out. But I do it honestly to keep my nose in that part of the world so I can talk about it for the show. I don't know if that makes any sense to you. Otherwise, I, you know, I sound like somebody in Washington driving around hearing prices are going up. I don't hear them, I pay for them. You know, I mean, it's the stuff that you see. I mean, everybody who talks about prices, some, I won't say more on, even though I did, talk about the price of chicken, the price of, well, of course, it's a big deal. It's right in your face. The price of gas, it's right in your face, because every time you go to gas, you're staring right at it. But the other stuff, we redid the back decks, all the stairs and stuff, you know, the weight-bearing stuff a while ago. Well, now all the banisters and things like that, not actually the banister where you can hit it and fall down, but all the uprights and stuff, they're too old. So just the top one, and we've got three of them. Now the bottom one is good shape, mine. Just the top one coming down, the wood and the people doing it, I'm pushing $1,500. The idea that you can build a home, that's why some places, when they really wanted starter housing, like Evergreen Park, had very strict building codes so people didn't get screwed. Evergreen Park, until 25 years ago, had to be plaster, had to be all the electric had to be pipe. So they didn't want people in starter homes getting screwed with some piece of crap, basically. So, right. But I don't. Right now, everybody's idea. You hear people from the Trump administration. You hear people from the Biden administration talk about building 300,000 houses for low income. What are you going to build them out of? Paper mache? You can't build. I don't think anybody, even now at the prices where they are, you can redeem their house for what it's going for. That's why your insurance is to the moon. I just got my bill for my, I don't know if anybody has one of these, but I have one of those umbrella policies. I don't play golf anymore, but I got it in case I ever, like, bunk somebody in the head with a golf ball or something. Something you never even heard of. I mean, most people, I think, know an umbrella policy. It's a policy on top of your homeowners and everything else. And in case something you didn't think of happened, or you did something to somebody, or that would kick in. Last year was $420. This year it's $810. And these guys are going to tell me my inflation is 2%? What am I supposed to be that stupid? I mean, I can go back and I can give you the price of the same kind of wood we've used for the decks for however many years. I go back and go through all those prices for you, and I bet they've doubled in 10 years.
Yep. Oh yeah.
And I just went. My truck leaks a little bit of oil. I remember buying this oil. I buy the really Valvoline high end stuff. I think it was 6.25, 6.50. Yesterday it was 8.25. And that's, what is that, in 3 years, it's up, whatever, $2, it's up 30%. I mean, we're not even on the same planet on the stuff that people don't necessarily look at. I mean, you and I remember going for an oil change, and the oil change was $19. What is it now, 100?
Yep. When it went up to 25, I was kind of ticked off.
Yeah. Somebody was telling me, and they got a Mercedes, I think. The oil change, and they probably do some other stuff, $1,000. How the hell is $1,000 for an oil change? What are you doing to the thing? We're not even close on what regular people can afford on any of this stuff. We're not even close. It is way worse than people are telling us. And, you know, I'm going to say we have a a guy in the White House you can't believe, but it doesn't matter. It's been going like this for 30 years. And that's why when everybody gets in these really huge arguments, right versus left, Jen, you look at the actual numbers, and I go, well, 2000 has been whatever. We're pushing 26 years. It's been half Democrat, half Republican. It doesn't change. That's why when people, you know, fight one side or the other on this stuff, I'm like, guys, it doesn't. When your side has been in there or your side has been in there, it's not like anybody fixed anything, right?
Yeah. Now, I mean, you mentioned, you know, the adjustments, that's kind of a euphemistic word to use, for what happened to real estate after the Depression, where prices collapsed, construction died completely, commercial and residential, and it took so long, you know, to get to a point where after World War II, finally, they couldn't build houses fast enough to put people in them, and it was the baby boomer generation, and yeah, everybody was trying to find a place to live because there was an acute shortage of it because things had dragged on for so long.
Yeah, a place like Hometown?
Yeah, I was just going to bring up Hometown. I mean, that was those duplexes that are still there. You know, Joe Marion.
You know what? They come on the market. There's a huge demand for them. It's quite a little community.
Yeah, and a lot of people deconvert them into, you know, join them together. And my parents almost bought two of them. You know, when they were first married, and my dad ended up working for Joe Marion for a while in other developments, but he built good houses and they were affordable. And
you know what, Jen? Not as many. Audrey sold one there a few months ago. When she comes out, she can talk about it. I don't think that many have been conjoined. They put additions on the back and stuff, but
I think you're right. It's always been a question where they were built. You know, they had a party wall.
Yeah.
So there were heating advantages for one thing. Two units because you shared them all.
Wait, explain to everybody what we're talking about.
Yeah, these were built as, you know, post World War II, and planned community. It was a hunk of land at 87th and Cicero, right?
Yeah.
And it had
actually no, it's know, Pulaski, isn't it?
No, Pulaski. Yeah, Pulaski. And they were, you know, all duplexes, I think. So they were two.
Right. Explain to somebody what a duplex is.
A duplex is a, you know, two units that both have their own footprint on the ground.
It's like a townhouse with two houses.
Yeah.
Only two.
Yeah. But it's not like, you know, a two flat is not a duplex.
No,
you know?
No.
Not a Midwestern terminology anyway, because that's stacked units. But a duplex has, you know, they're adjacent to each other. And you had, you know, fee simple ownership for each one, and you shared a wall with somebody, so it was joint maintenance of that. But you had a yard. There were services. The city was really growing in that direction then. It had a new church built, you know, Catholic church that, you know, right away got the school got filled up. And it was, they were really, I think the listing price, I could be wrong, but I think it was like 9,000, 8,000.
At the most.
Yeah. And that's like late 40s, early 50s. And, you know, it was nicely landscaped. You know, they knew everything was new. But it was, God, you know, this is kind of like, boy, this is the first sign of any mass, you know, home construction.
Well, the sense of community was off the chart.
Yes, yes.
Did you ever go see Hoover Dam, drive through?
Never seen it.
Well, if you drive through Boulder City, it's right, then you go down to where the dam is, because it's, you know, obviously you're up high. It's this incredibly, it's still a government town there. I think it's dry, John. I think it's still owned by the government, but you can't buy a house there. It is absolutely pristinely clean. I don't know if there's a bar. There might be now, but when the people first went out to work on the dam, and they were living in tents down there. I mean, it was brutal. So they said, okay, we need to build a community, and they started building houses. And the joke was, you better remember your address, because it was a vacant lot next door. You might not find it, because when you come home, there's a house next to you, and you'll never recognize your place. They did the same thing, Jen. They had all these people. They built homes for all the workers and the people from the construction companies. I'm going to say in 6 months to a year. People just pounding nails, doing the job. They're all kind of the same, but they're all pretty. I'm sure there's been, you know, remodeling done, but you drive through here and say, God, this is one hell of a nice neighborhood. Why do these houses all look the same? But if you're ever out there, that's the show. I mean, the dam is the show. Plus, the bridge they put there is really something. If anybody knows anything about construction, next time Bill's on, we'll talk about it. But the only bridge between Arizona and Nevada there was the top of the dam. And then after 9/11, people kept saying this probably isn't the greatest idea. to have all the through traffic go on the top of the dam. I mean, that was the bridge. So they built this other bridge maybe a mile down. It is, you look at it and you go, how the hell could they have built that thing? It's got to be, it's an arch bridge. John, it's got to be 1,500 feet in the air. And you say, well, how did you build it? How did you support the bottom while you were pouring the concrete? It turns out they didn't. The end of the bridge abutments used to be like another 200 feet in the air. They had a massive cableway system like when they built the dam. And they poured all the concrete and supported all the pieces of the arch before it was joined together from the top. Until it was together, then they could tear down the top because you didn't need it because you had the arch. You watch how that thing is built. It is, talk about American ingenuity. You can't help yourself by feeling proud of being American when you see how they built that thing. Right next to the Hoover Dam, which is another incredible accomplishment. I mean, it's not like we can't do anything. And it's just when we get ourselves messed up somehow, we mess ourselves up. But we decided to do something. We can do it pretty good.
Well, you know, the maybe not quite the flip side of what was going on with like hometown type things, but that's when you also saw, and for some of the same reasons, an explosion in public housing. So that's when Ida B. Wells homes, you know, 39th and Cottage, this huge development of low-rise homes, so duplexes or triplexes, you know, three or four units together, townhomes, planned unit development. They gutted it, raised everything, and just built this little subdivision out of nothing. And it was all African-American residents. And the Cabrini homes on the north side, you know, were, you know, mainly Italians who lived in that neighborhood. And this was, you know, is entry-level housing for people who really were at the lowest end.
Well, the Robert Taylor homes were different because they moved all those people because of the Dan Rand.
Right. And then the gigantic, you know, the Stateway Gardens and Taylor homes, and, you know, 15-story, 20-story buildings that were just god-awful. But that isn't, you know, the way it started out. The thing was that there, you know, there were so many people in desperate need of housing because there had been pretty much a cessation of, you know, building permits and no more, you know, mortgages. People were being foreclosed faster than they were able to buy a house. But you still needed housing for people.
John, there was a guy, we got to go to break here, but there was a dude, he used to play handball 2 days a week at Evergreen Baffin Tennis at 6:30 in the morning. And remember Mayor Vacco, that whole group?
Yeah.
Those guys were there every morning sitting there having coffee, all the big shots, the construction people. And one day, we're done playing handball, I sit down, you know, you can sit down with these guys, they're all politicians, and they were the movers and shakers. And one guy starts to BS with me, and we started talking about, I told him about Pullman and blah, anyway. So we started talking about the Robert Taylor homes. He said, that's one of the most interesting screw-ups in the history of politics. And I go, what are you talking about? He goes, well, New York had done something just like that, like 10 years before. I don't know, it was Stuyvesant something.
Bedford Stuyvesant, yeah.
And he goes, the idea was to take people essentially from the bad neighborhoods, the ghetto for lack of a better term, and build this high-rise and put everybody in there. And he goes, it was an unmitigated disaster because everybody was rental, the place, nobody wanted to ride the elevators. After 8 years, people wrote papers and they said, this is absolutely not the way to go, this is a disaster, don't ever do it again. And that was before Robert Taylor Homes was built. All the research was there, all the conclusions on what horrible an idea it was, and we did it anyway. That's pretty scary, isn't it?
Yeah. And I mean, the sad thing there was that really was an ill-conceived attempt to replicate all the redlining patterns on the south side. So they took the areas that had been, you know, between the tracks, north and south, right, you know, alongside the Dan Ryan. Dan Ryan took part of this too and configured that. We're not going
to. Well, yeah, we got to go to a quick break because we got Audrey. But you know what, though? When John and I are talking, somehow we got to give the background. The Dan Ryan project in Chicago, other than the Tennessee Valley, was the single biggest. What's the term for
land reclamation?
We had to move more people for that project than any other project ever in the country. Those were, the thing is, 3/4 mile wide for 20 miles long or 18 miles long. Those were all houses.
That's densely populated.
Yeah, that was densely populated. It's one of the reasons why Chicago's population isn't what it used to be. The expressways, all three of them, used to be people.
Yep.
Right? SP Futures down 8, NASDAQ is on 45. Be right back, Audrey Johnson.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate this summer, could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTIsecurities.com. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hey, guys.
What's up, G?
Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early. I
gotta get out of here. I think I'm gonna lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Gotta hear at least one word of Mama Cass. S&P Futures down 8, NASDAQ Futures down 47. Welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. Matt, you're a music aficionado. How good would Mama Cass have been had she lasted longer?
Oh, man. I mean, you know, she had just a great voice. Honestly, could be one of the... I think she still is considered to be one of the great singers of the 1960s, you know.
Well, how many people have the three-octave voice? Is it like one in a 10,000 or what?
It's a rare find, yeah.
Who else does? Is Ud with us? S&P Futures down 8, NASDAQ Futures down 47, 49. We probably should do a real quick... spin around the world, or even though not much is happening. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 69.3%, FTSE down 4, call that flat, CAC around down 56.7. In Asia, these guys have been on fire. Nikkei's up another 336 today, and they had another record Friday, so this is further than the record. 43,714, Hang Seng down 93.3. Shanghai, which has been strong lately, and of course, everybody on TV last week was saying, buy Chinese stocks. Oh boy, couldn't get me to buy one of those. Shanghai up 31.8%. Because the guys can just take the companies like right from you. Bonds, on a 10-year rate unchanged, 4.31. We've got oil, which has been going nowhere. Well, it's up 29 cents today, 63.09. Still going nowhere. We've got gold up 10 bucks, 33.92. We'll see if it gets back over 3,400. And we have crypto is down 2,500. Wow, 115, 157. Hey, Odd, how are you?
Fine. Good morning, everybody.
Everything good?
Roger.
Everything good in the real estate world?
So far, so good, but it's only 7:30.
God, that's a You could tell Odd was a traitor, John. That was a standard line in the crowd. How you doing? Fine, but it's only 10 o'clock. We'll see.
Audrey, Tom and I were talking about Hometown a few minutes ago, so I'm poking around on the Tribune archives. The price in 49, when it was announced, development was announced and they broke the ground, $8,500 for a 750-square-foot house, $300 down, and VA financing. So, nice.
Well, the GI Bill also included financing, which most people don't probably remember, or I don't remember, but that was why it was even kind of more discriminatory, because all the African-American soldiers that served, and I'm not so sure about the Asian soldiers, but yeah, they had all these benefits, but guess what? Nobody gave them a mortgage. Nobody sold them the house, so it was kind of a... Well, you recently sold a place in Hometown, didn't you?
In where?
Hometown.
We were working at it. It didn't work out. But Hometown is extremely popular. The way it's set up, it is a throwback to that time, because you could see how it was constructed for, like, the GIs that there were. Like, there's a couple of banks of what are now condos, which were apartments, and then the duplexes... it was actually this forerunner of the big plan communities. It was very interesting. And what's even more interesting, it's the same little place. It's not expanded its boundaries. It has the same things, but it's like multi-generations living there. So you'll find grandpa, grandma, even great-grandma, great-grandpa there, and the mom and dad and the kids. And these, which were a little two-bedroom or three-bedroom duplexes, most... no basements. People end up putting additions on and even second floors and staying in the area.
Did they have their own school, or was it just part of the community school?
They did have a school there. And you know what? I think it's still there, but I can't tell you for sure. But yeah, they have their own little fire department. It's an interesting spot.
I mean, you didn't. Sorry, I thought you had a listing there. You didn't. You had somebody who was thinking about buying a place.
You know what? I've had a lot of listings there. Nothing recently, but it's just it's a great place because it's one of the few lower point type of duplexes where you've got actually your own fenced yard and a side drive with the garage. So you're actually buying more of a home than a townhouse concept, and a lot of people like that, especially if you have kids or a dog.
Not those people that have those dogs, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how they can do it.
So tell them how your dog behaved at the vet.
Barking. Which one?
Maggie barking at all the other dogs.
Oh, well, yeah, so that's your dog. So she was quite, of course, ill-behaved.
She's only 19, John. She still thinks she wants to take on every dog there is, and she weighs about 8 pounds. All right, let me at him. Watches a pit bull comes in, and she wants to take him on. All right, the pit bull's looking at her like, what's the matter with her?
Yeah. Supposed to be half dead when I brought her in there. She was sick. By the time you saw the vet, you would think there was nothing wrong with her. She's so busy barking at everybody.
God. So we're talking about different parts of the economy that, you know, bear watching. What do you make of, and I honestly can't, I wasn't alive during the tulip thing. What do you guys make of the $2 trillion?
Really?
Yeah, I'm not that old. What do you make of the $2 trillion of, quote, wealth that's in these crypto things? I mean, it's a concept I can't even...
Us older people don't completely understand it, and I am highly suspicious of something that I can't put my hands on. Doesn't mean that it's not going to be, or it isn't, the wave of the future. In addition to the future, you can look at it as, and we have to participate. The world is, so I think the United States has to make it safe, accessible, understandable, because it's here to stay, whether we all agree on it. Am I invested in it? No. But I am the highly suspicious type. So it's, you know, I understand the basics about it. Could I expound on it for half an hour? No.
Well, what happens if it collapses? I mean, how much of the world's wealth is? I mean, $2 trillion. If it were to disappear, and I'm not predicting that, I can't even conceive of who's got it, John. I can't, or Audrey, I can't conceive of who'd be getting hurt. Is it? I mean, where would the where where's the you know, whenever we saw about the mortgage collapse and things like that, you know, we could maybe make a shot at who, you know, which banks were in trouble with Bear Stearns. Was if all of a sudden tomorrow Bitcoin was 40 instead of 110, and if it got to 40, I'm not so sure it'd stop there. But say it did, it went to 40. Can you even put your thumb on where the dangers are?
Well, I certainly couldn't. But the way that it's like if you lose your code, you've lost your Bitcoin. There's no way to retrieve it, from what I understand. So can things vaporize? Well, yeah, things can vaporize. It's just like the meltdown from the tech industry. You know, no matter what you own, no matter what it is, it can all be destroyed in the right circumstances.
Well, if you have a house, and it goes down to value zero, you still got the house. You can still live in it. There's
maybe you don't have the house, like our less recession-proof.
Yeah.
So the point is, I think anything you own can be destroyed, disappear, or change hands. So I don't think I have an answer to that. John might know more than I do.
Well, John, man, it's not something we normally think about. I mean, I don't, and I'm in the industry. But I just sit there and go, you know, I'll basically bitch about some stock that has too high of a PE ratio or revenue per share. And I look at Bitcoin, doesn't have any revenue, any income, doesn't have any anything. I mean, what are we comparing things against?
Yeah, how do you have a conversation about this?
Yeah. I mean, I'll say, hey, Dita's stock 15 times revenue, I think it's too high. Well, what about these guys? There is no revenue. I mean, it's...
Well, it's interesting. I think one of the few safeguards that I'm sure I'm not saying it correctly, but when these pieces all fit together, if a piece is missing, that's how, you know, they know, because all these, that's why there's only going to be so much Bitcoin created. It's not an infinity. Like, once all this is sold out, then that's your base. So all of these little bits of information that make up your encryption key are supposed to actually all fit together in like a giant puzzle. And when it doesn't fit, then and it's missing. So, you know, but if you can't, I don't believe you. If you do lose your code, I believe that, you know, too bad for you. It's like people who hide their encryption key somewhere.
All right, just put your both of your minds, because you're both Southsiders. Put your mind on the South Side. And I'm going to ask you.
You're not going to ask me that.
I'll ask you. Do you honestly believe that if you bought $1,000 worth of Bitcoin 10 years ago and you lost your password, that somehow 50 years from now that's still sitting there waiting for you? I don't believe that for a second.
I do from what I've read.
I know, but...
I'd like to believe, but knowing how stuff like that works, I think you got.
I think only because somebody would be smart enough. I mean, there's constantly attempts to hack this stuff. There is eventually going to be some computer, some AI, or some person who's going to figure out how to do that. And that's what my big worry was, that somebody's just going to siphon out the whole thing.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting when you. I mean,
we should have people on who understand this and talk.
Well, they're believers. They're not going to believe there's any. They're convinced that there's no fraud whatsoever because everybody gets to see the fraud. I don't know that I, you know, it's funny. Kenny Polcari, who obviously one of our best guests. Well, everybody's our best guest, but he said, well, they're going to regulate it, and I said, being in a regulated industry like I am, I said, Kenny, how do you regulate it? Well, what do you mean? There's going to be regulations. For who? He goes, what are you talking about? I said, well, we're regulated. If FINRA wants to give us some grief, they pick up the phone or they text or they send whatever the thing is through the communication network to my brother. He goes, yeah, what's your point? And I go, who the hell do you call it, Bitcoin? How do you regulate something where there's nobody on the other end? And he goes, touche. Good point. How do you do that? I mean, who do you regulate, John?
No.
I mean,
I'm with you. I like solid things. I like, bank accounts. I like real estate. It is hard to disappear with an apartment building.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
stock certificates, right?
Yeah, well, it's not like I want my concern is that before you came on, I was talking about, you know, the housing stuff, with how many people can afford the house now. and I'm looking at some of the stock prices. And I'm not telling anybody to sell anything. I'm not telling anybody not to buy a house. Who knows? We could go on like this. We could grow into it. Hopefully we will. And everything, everybody will keep going swimmingly. That's what I hope would happen. Carl disagrees. He thinks that's not going to happen. But well, anyway, I hope I'm right. Maybe he's probably right. But I've never seen anything quite like this, this growing amoeba that is now, if there was $100 million in Bitcoin, I sort of wouldn't care. When I say I wouldn't care, I care for the people who have it. I don't want anybody to lose money. But if it disappeared, I don't think it's a, you know, pimple on the ass of an elephant on the market. But if all of a sudden there was a big disaster there and there's $2 trillion there, I'm just trying to anticipate, is that, everybody keeps asking everybody who says the market's too high and so forth, what's the trigger? And what I'm trying to ask the two of you in a clumsy way, because I'm going to get back to housing, what odd, could that possibly be a trigger?
Of course it could. If somebody figured out how to hack into the database, something more within the algorithms that make up these things, or the people who are mining it, you know, figure out how to, you know, screw up mining it somehow, that I believe everything can be messed with. It's inherent in the system, because it was still designed by human beings, used by human beings, which means some human being is going to kind of come along and screw it up, probably.
Do you think whoever designed it, whoever designs anything, remember the movie War Games, ever designed something that he can't hack into?
Well, there's something somebody could always figure out as time proves. I mean, look how worried we have to be now about our infrastructure. And we're constantly getting bombarded around the world by all the terrorist countries, you know. Plus, you know, you got China, you got Iran. They had that big hack on the water systems recently.
Yeah.
I think in Minnesota. So there's nothing built that somebody's not going to try to get into, and you have to try and keep your defenses up no matter what it is. But at this point in time that happened, obviously the younger generation's far more into it than we are. So it would, you know, it greatly affect their future probably more than ours. It's the same that happened with the tech bubble. There was kind of a group of people that were all in on the techs that got slammed too.
Yeah. So what Nancy last week said, things are actually picking up a little bit. I've noticed you've been busy. I mean, people are always calling you. Is it branching out at all, or is it sort of the same kind of people, cash buyer to cash buyer?
Oh, wait. First, I have to ask you guys a question. Uh-oh. All right? Let's see what... What is the biggest pizza company in the United States? What has the most stores?
Oh, it's where my place my buddy
works. Domino's?
I was going to say Domino's.
Nope.
Really? Little Caesars?
Yeah, Little Caesars.
The most, and I've read this, was so interesting that I'm actually going to take a road trip to check this out. The Hut Brothers have the most pizza chain stores in the United States. They have over 9,000 stores in gas stations. They call it gas station pizza. And it's supposed to be absolutely delicious. People swear by it. And it started as a small, but it's self-contained. It's a franchise that has no fees. So people who have a gas station buy this system, which can, it's pretty cheap. It looks like it goes from like $13,000 to $25,000, depending on what you want to cook and whatnot. And you put this in your gas station, they put your own toppings on it. Look it up, it's fascinating. Domino's is down the chain at about 6,000. And this is only basically in the eastern two-thirds of the United States. It stops when it gets to around Colorado.
Wow.
Really?
Because they only distribute their... The thing is, they have to be able to use their stuff and their pizza items.
Along those lines, Rod, when you cross the border in Indiana, Jen, you know this, I don't know if Matt does, he's not as observant about these things, but now that he's 25, he might be. Every gas station sells fried chicken.
Yeah, well, this is kind of the same thing. So the next time you go to the gas station, I want you to look for a Hunt's Pizza and try it, because they were interviewing random people and saying that their pizza is delicious and it's fresh. They have to they could only ossify with these franchises where you could get the right ingredients. You buy like through them or through a local store, use their equipment.
Is it oven made or is it microwave?
It's got certain. No, it's not microwave. It's actually baked, and it bakes it in under 10 minutes or something waiting. And then there's also like slices, so keep your eye out. And then the also other second extremely successful one is something that we could probably, we should do three of us could do a road trip and check this out. Casey's is also supposed to have delicious pizza at gas station.
All right, so every gas station we go in, we get a bucket of chicken and a pizza.
Well, I don't know about the pizza. Well, I'm just saying I found it fascinating, and it's a family business. And just if you read the story, you can look up Hunt Brothers Pizza. It's probably one of the more interesting articles I've read lately, especially if you love pizza.
I've had pizza at Speedway gas stations.
Really?
I don't know who makes that.
Yeah, Speedway is also a revenue producer because they sell a lot of food to go. And surprisingly, a lot of America gets their nutrition at the gas stations.
Well, speaking of which, we got a minute or two. What do you think that's done to other places? I mean, even to Myers, they don't sell much there. But I'm going to say most of their beer and cigarette sales are at the gas station, not at the store.
Yeah.
But how many other places? I mean, some of them are hot dogs. There's all kinds of chow out there. You're going to buy your milk out there. You buy everything. How many people just use that? What does it even do to your standalone 7-Eleven? I mean. Yeah.
There's a lot to recommend it because you're already parked.
Yeah.
You can multitask. You can pay for everything at once, probably. You don't have to drive around, look for a parking space, go in, get distracted, talk to somebody, or not find what you're looking for, and then go someplace else. You can play that game all day. So I think people's time is so, valuable.
I think they charge. I mean, they get ice for the cooler and beer. It's a hell of a lot easier than going to the store, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
You get whatever size pizza you want or a slice. They were interviewing people, and one little guy said he gets a breakfast pizza there every morning.
Oh, God. Jen, some of these places on the southwest burbs, because Audrey and I sometimes take a ride out chasing some flowers at one place she wants to get them. We go by these new stations out in, like, the middle of nowhere. I don't know what these guys are expecting, but what's the average now? Three restaurants in the station, a huge food thing, a massive cooler, every kind of beer you want. I mean, it's a city.
Yeah. Even the mobile station near me up on Lawrence Avenue has a separate, corner of the store that's ice cream. These people flock from all over the neighborhood, just walk in. They're not buying gas or anything else. They're just going in there and buying ice cream on a hot summer night.
Well, they all have a Dunkin' Donuts. Pretty much.
Oh, yeah.
And some have the Baskin Robbins. And the big thing now is Mexican restaurants, right, Odd?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I will tell you, which is very interesting, all right, I'm going to give this restaurant a plug, and now I can't remember the name of it. I'm going to try and look it up. In Orland Park, at 143rd in the Grange, there is a BP station.
That's huge. This big, huge BP thing.
Yeah. Yeah, there's right by a little shopping mall that I tend to favor sometimes. And I happen to notice that it looks like there's a Mexican restaurant attached to the station. And I cruise by for a while, and finally I just can't stand it anymore. I have to go see what's going on with it. And you walk in the BP station, and there's the gas station with the cashier, and the burritos, and your coffee station. But then you go, you see these hanging bead curtains, and you go in there, and there's this beautiful Mexican restaurant with super comfortable chairs, and it's decorated beautifully, and their food is delicious. It is probably one of the best Mexican restaurants I've had around here. The service is great. The people are awesome. So, and there's also a really great restaurant attached to a little gas station, like 171st in Oak Park in Tinley Park. And that's been there forever. Like, has predated all people who used to do that stuff.
John, if you didn't know, Watt is very good at trading. She's still a rep of of PTI Securities and Futures. She's terrific in real estate, but her real calling is to write a sequel to the Streets and Sand Guide to the Best Restaurants in Chicago, Real Estate Guide to the Best Hot Dog Stands and Pizza Joints. It would be a huge seller.
I'm going to do that when I retire.
You gotta do that, Osh.
I mean, she, you know, because she's around during the day. You get hungry in the middle of the day. Stuff that you and I would never, place we would never know. I'll, you know, say, oh, those guys got pretty good hot dogs. Ah, no, this place down here is better.
Okay. Well, I was just talking to a couple people. You know, one of whom was a real estate broker, but you know, we kind of concluded real estate brokers know more about all this stuff than anybody else because they talk to people about it. They're on the fly all the time. They're driving by places. They're checking them out.
Yeah.
They're business people, for starters.
They live in our car, so, basically.
Yeah.
Oh, well, here, I did find that. It's called El Mezcal Mexican Food. It's at 14299 South LaGrange Road. It's my first official recommendation in the business.
Now, they shouldn't be banned from having a liquor license because the gas station's got a liquor license, right? They sell beer.
I don't know if they're banned. Yeah. They might not want to or might not be able to afford one. You know, liquor licenses are a process.
I'll bet you go on
the
record.
Awesome.
I bet you really go in the gas station, buy yourself a 12-pack, and come in and have it at the table. They probably wouldn't care. Yeah.
I don't think that BP sells liquor, but I could be wrong.
Maybe not.
I'm the person who pays at the pump and keeps on going, so I'm a bad person to ask.
Well, and we were just talking about switching back to real estate. We were just talking about
Let's talk about food. I'm hungry.
When we were talking about the remodeling and the pricing of houses and so forth, and Auda's just finished, did a beautiful job, by the way, remodeling this home. Always wanted to try it. She had an opportunity to essentially get a place that was needed updating. You know, it was a solid place to start with, but needed updating. And Aud has some guys working with her and has actually done a spectacular job.
Thank you.
Aud, what did you find in terms of inflation? What did you find? If I don't think you want to get in that business, but if you were to go start flipping houses, what did it say for your terms of what if the thing wasn't good in the first place and you had to replace furnaces and air conditioning? I mean, what would you have to get a place for if it really needed all kinds of work and sell it for $400 and make any money? I mean, were you shocked at the prices?
I have to say, since the last time I've done this, it's been quite a while. I just haven't had the time to invest in looking, doing the whole bit with everything else going on in the world. But I was very aware of what things cost as far as your what you need as far as lumber, you know, what things cost, faucets, fixtures, those kind of things, them in the stores. But my big shock was labor. So when I last time I did this, I would say labor was no more than a third, a quarter to a third. And I would say now, for all of you out there who are thinking about rehabbing, your labor is going to be 50%. Just about 50% labor, 50% materials, depending on how high end, maybe even more on labor. So get your numbers. Make sure you got a ton of extra money set aside for the project, because it's going to be more than a 10% overrun, I will tell you that.
But Aud, is there the stuff you did... was sort of labor intensive. I mean, if you had to pay, you know, $10,000 for an air conditioner or furnace, that number would have got skewed back to the material side, right? I mean, you were doing flooring.
I did not have to worry about anything like that.
So you were doing bathrooms, you were doing floors, you were doing kitchens, which is pretty labor intensive.
Lighting fixtures, you know, some more of the simple things.
Well, I mean, you put a whole bunch of canisters in the ceiling. That's not simple.
You have to just make sure you have to have an extensive conversation with your contractor before you start. Because if you've not done it for a while and you've lived in your house, even if you're doing it for yourself, you're going to need a complete list of what things are going to cost and a very good estimate. Because it is... It's first of all, like anything else, and I am very lucky to know good people in the business, but to get a good contractor, and you're still supervising because people have to stay on time and show up and get their materials. And the biggest thing I learned is you better get your materials on site before you start and save yourself the wait time. The wait time on certain materials, cabinets, countertops, especially any type of wood. I use the term wood loosely. Cabinet type of thing that you could get backup is incredible. Same thing with windows. I mean, if you were looking for windows, I know people that are still on a 3 to 4 month wait for windows. So you better find out exactly what things cost. Order your materials. I don't care if you have to keep them in your garage, keep them on site, because the more things that are on site, the less you're paying for people to stand around and do nothing, or they forgot, like, or you forgot to get the trim for the moldings, or you forgot to get, you know, the shower tile. So find out what it costs, order it, either get it on site or have them give a delivery date. Don't keep running back and forth to the store. You'll never get done on time, and your cost overruns in time and labor are really going to get you then.
How many store trips did you make? 100?
No, actually, I did not. My contractor, and I have to give John a shout out, he did a great job. He's going to be doing more business down in the area soon, so I can happy to recommend him. He and his crew did a pretty great job, and I did not have to do any of this by myself. If I had a problem, it was addressed. You have to get somebody who's responsive, who you can find, who's willing to work with you.
We also have to, estimating labor hours is tough. And I mean, you think stuff goes together easily. I mean, it doesn't. And you're probably up to, even in your, that thing, you got to be pushing 1,000 hours.
I don't know.
800? It's not like it's 20.
You know what? I'd have to sit down and do it, but I will say that it was 10, and I feel very lucky. It was about 10 weeks start to finish, and it would have been about 7.5 weeks if we didn't have to wait for the cabinets.
I mean, if you're talking...
I was very... And they did not work... my guys do not work Sundays, so everybody needed to pay off.
But, I mean, four people, it's 35 hours a day times 40 days is a lot. I mean, it adds up.
Oh, yeah. When they were there, they worked. They're not wasting time. You have to,
But you don't think
a lot.
You don't think you can build a starter home for $150,000, do you?
I get you one of those little tiny homes, throw it on wheels, and put it in your front yard.
John, that's exactly what you were saying earlier, wasn't it? Anyway,
they're actually very cute. I think it'd be kind of fun. Here's one of my, if I found the right piece of land, you could get a bunch of those tiny homes, make a little like cutesy little upscale campground on them.
Oh, God.
And everything would be self-contained. I think that'd be kind of fun.
Oh, God. No room for rats. S&P futures down. On that note, on S&P futures down 3, S&P futures down 20. You guys, it was fun. It looks like it hasn't really been a whole lot of change in the industry, really, has around the last month or so. I mean, it's kind of the same thing.
Actually, it's getting a little busier.
That's what Nance was saying.
It's summer doldrums, and right now people are busy getting their kids back in school, and the last vacation is coming up with Labor Day, so people are a little sidetracked right now. And it's been hot.
Next week, John, let's talk a little bit about the commercial piece, because that's still... Ugh. Although I know a couple of people here that just went and looked at apartments in a couple of buildings on LaSalle Street here. Maybe we could talk a little bit about that. SP Futures down 3, NASDAQ is down 20, so we've come back some. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Check out those gas stations.
Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. JetBlue Airways. It's not the only way to fly, but it should be. Visit JetBlue.com. Empower HR, your human resources partner. That's EmpowerHR.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. BDL Compliance Consulting. Visit BDLCC.com. DAX Research. Listen to David Andelman on Mondays and Thursdays and go to DACSResearch.net.
You know I love you, baby. I wouldn't leave you. It wasn't my fault. Honest. I ran out of gas. I had a flat tire. I didn't have enough money for cab fare. My truck didn't come back from the cleaners. An old friend came in from out of town. Someone stole my car. There was an earthquake, a terrible flood. Look, it wasn't my fault, I swear to God.